Another announcement. Michael wasted an enormous amount of the group's time and patience with non-work-related ethnic celebrations and parades of soft-minded do-goodedness. No longer. No more meetings.
Amen.
Instead, today I will begin my first lecture in a long series of lectures designed to increase your knowledge on the world of paper.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. The season preview episode, as well as our interview with Warren Sharp. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, or resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Weiss.
Football.
Let's get into it.
Football, man.
Around the corner.
It's a football week.
Well, if you're listening to this, football starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thursday night. I don't know if you've done any of your drafts yet. I got my first draft tomorrow night. Really, like my – actually, it's my second. I'm doing a dynasty for the first time this year.
There you go.
And my redraft is tomorrow night or tonight if you're listening to the podcast on Wednesday.
So I used to I used to do like multiple, like 4 or 5 – things.
Yeah, I can't do that.
I can't do that anymore. I consolidated it to 2. And same. If you do a draft not the week of the regular season,
you're crazy.
I don't want to play in your league. Well, now that we got an extra week sort of in between, I might give some leeway. But if you're doing a draft in like the middle of August, don't even text me because I'm just not doing it. But I'm so happy.
Although I am glad I did my dynasty when I did, because that got me Damian Pierce.
There you go.
Very, very late. Yeah.
I have his name circled on my little draft sheet too, by the way.
I'm sure you do. Yeah. Going to be an exciting name to watch. All right, so let's talk Giants. So we're going to do our usual week-by-week breakdown. I think we want to start with just some roster notes. This already happened last week, but we didn't record. Blake Martinez, quick hits. There's something that we don't know. I think that's pretty obvious. You know, the phrase that Jordan and Dan Duggan keep using is there's something else there, and we just don't know what it is yet. The way I view it is pretty simple. I'm of the opinion that Joe Shane is a very smart guy. I'm also of the opinion that he is a very likable guy. He's a player's GM. It's essentially the opposite of the previous GM, whose name I won't mention. Well, I'll probably have to mention it during the next topic, but either way, intelligent player's guy. He knows what the salary cap implications are of every player on his roster, right? When he decided not to cut or trade Blake Martinez earlier in the summer, it's because he anticipated Blake Martinez being on the roster. I don't know what happened. We can speculate. I've speculated. Who knows? Maybe Blake just wanted more time to focus on his Pokemon collection. But at the end of the day, he wasn't voted captain. He had a mysterious absence the next day and then was released. So we can speculate all we want, but Joe Shane does not strike me as the type of GM who, you know, he's rebuilding a roster from scratch, and a veteran linebacker off an ACL who is unhappy wants a release. He's going to grant him a release. So we'll wait. I'm sure that some more news will come out in the near future about Blake Martinez, but that's really my thought on the matter.
Yeah, I think the move was weird. Obviously, there's no salary cap savings, and there's no, you know, he took a pay cut to stay. Usually when that happens, that means a guy's here to stay, but in this case, he wasn't. I also think that there was something else there. The whole mutually agreed to part ways sort of.
Right. That was the,
you know, like there was something that both sides agreed that this wasn't going to work. I just think, look, they took a pay cut. He took a pay cut, and the overall expectation was he was going to be on the roster. I don't know. Maybe he didn't look as good as they thought in the preseason and during training camp. And, you know, I don't think anybody emerged. I mean, you know, Darion Beavers had a good summer, but then he tore his ACL. I just think It could it be a fit in, on defense? Could it be the fact that he didn't feel like he was fully recovered from the ACL? Could it also play a role that they thought, hey, he might not be a good enough player, but if he still has leadership qualities in a locker room that's going to be filled with young guys, we can keep him. Oh, but then he doesn't get voted captain by the players. And it's like, well, they're just
on a team with 10 captains, by the way.
There's just like no point of having Blake here. So obviously there was something there. I don't think it was just between Blake Martinez and coaches and front office. I think quite possibly there was something there with the players. I mean, he did not get voted captain with what you said, 10 players. So I'm not going to speculate. I just think that my conclusion is based on what we know is, look, he was a captain. He was a leader of the defense. He was a signal caller. He took a pay cut, significant one. He stayed on board. Probably didn't look, they didn't think he looked good enough to play in the summer. And then, you know, he ends up not having that same leadership role on this team. And they thought, hey, you know, let's just roll with the young guys in a season that we're just going to be playing a bunch of young guys. So,
yeah, I think that's exactly the right amount of speculation.
You're not going to see me be upset about it. You're not going to see
Absolutely, you're not going to see me
say in the middle of the season when linebackers are struggling, well, we could use Blake Martinez. I'm just not my mindset.
Although you know exactly which fans are going to be
absolutely
saying
that's
that.
Why I brought it up. I'm just going to be, hey, you know, something there didn't work with Blake. And they moved on. So I would have had no problem if they would have moved on in March, took a pay cut. Obviously, they lose $2 million there with the way the salary cap is structured, but I'm not losing like sleep over this.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, should we move on to the other piece of player news?
Yes.
Your favorite.
Leonard Williams.
USC Leonard Williams.
For the record,
although this is not very USC Leonard Williams.
Yeah, I just want to say this for the record, okay? I like Leonard Williams, the player. I think he's a really, really good player in this league, I think. But the fact that the way he got to the Giants overshadows how good of a player he's been, and the fact, obviously, because the Giants have not been a good team. But I do think he's a very good player. Do I think he's as good of a player as his contract warrants? No. But I do am okay with him. I would have been okay with him finishing his tenure with the Giants on the contract he was given, given their how comfortable they are with the salary cap. With that said, restructuring any contract is never good. Now, obviously, there's circumstances of, you know, there's a team winning now. They're trying to free up cap space. There's a player there. Hey, we're a player or two away. Let's get some cap space. Let's sign these guys. A la what Buffalo did with Von Miller, what the Rams did last year. That, you know, you make sense. It's not good, but it makes sense because they're going for it. The Giants being forced to restructure the Leonard Williams contract has everything to do with the horrible contracts that they've been given out the last 4 years. And then on top of that, restructuring those contracts and moving money back. Like with Kenny.
I mean, the Giants were restructuring contracts at the end of last season because they didn't have enough guys to accommodate for injuries.
I mean, they had restructured every single contract that they could last year. Literally. I mean, you could go back and look at it. They literally could not have restructured any more contracts. Literally could not have done any more.
So with the Leonard Williams, call it restructure, they add a void year, $6 million in dead cap next year, $6 million in dead cap the year after that. And on top of that, he is the fourth highest non-quarterback cap hit currently for the 2023 NFL season.
Yeah.
His cap hit's higher than Aaron Donald.
Next year, yeah.
I mean, Thanks, Dave. Fuck.
I don't know if they'll extend them. Them adding a void year is pretty interesting. That probably tells me that they're not thinking about an extension right now.
But no, and because they added the void year, they're not due a compensatory pick.
Right. So
cherry on top.
I don't know how that will play out with Leonard Williams, but look, they needed the cap space to get through the season, so they had to do what they had to do. But this is why, this is an example of why the salary cap, truthfully, I don't think does matter unless you make it matter. And the previous regime made it matter.
And they made it matter.
And now they're paying
the
price.
It's very simple. It boils down to the fact that Dave Gettleman came into a bad situation and quintupled down on those bad decisions to make it infinitely worse. Whereas Joe Shane now looks at this mess and instead of quintupling down again, says, well, fuck, now I need to take like 2 seasons to fix this shit show, and we're underway. So it's not going to be pretty. You're not going to like it, but it's what has to happen.
And one of the things about the salary cap is cap flexibility and cap space, I think, are sort of two separate things. And I think what Joe Shane is doing is trying to create cap flexibility for years to come. Just because they're going to have money next year, it doesn't look like they're just going to be spending. I think their goal is for the next 3-4 years that they have cap flexibility so that if they're in a position where a player becomes available, they don't have to restructure contracts in order to go get that player. So, look, you're sort of, face doing the time for the crimes that were committed for the next 2 years, and they're going to have to fix salary cap space. So this is one of the things of biting that bullet, is forcing to restructure contracts because, you don't have cap space.
All right, shall we move on?
Yes, sir. The 2022 regular season is here. I love football season for so many reasons. I love seeing people go crazy because a player doesn't practice with a calf injury. And I say that because I did suffer a calf strain over the weekend.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I did.
Playing spades?
No. I was camping and
oh, that's right.
Camping. I was camping, went for a hike, was going up a mountain. First time I did that in a long time. I'm only 31. I'm in semi-decent shape. I do have a little bit of a gut. I was going up, just sort of felt it tightening up, and it tightened up, and man, I just went down like a bitch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I just went down like a bitch, and my brother-in-law's a nurse, and he was like, is it tight? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, cramps? I was like, it hurts more than cramps. He's like, you probably strained your calf, and I was like, oh, man. And it hurt pretty much the next 2 days. I still went water rafting. Loved water
rafting. You're a
trooper. Yeah. But reason I say that is I will never complain about a player missing practice over a calf strain again. Because I've experienced it wasn't good. I don't know how serious it is. I mean, I'm feeling better today, but it was bad. But I do love that, seeing everybody overreact at injury reports and who's practicing and who's not practicing. Awesome part of the NFL being back.
Yeah.
Week 1, Tennessee. I love this opponent for the Giants for week 1 for 4 reasons. Number 1, it's not a divisional opponent. I hate playing your division in week 1. I know what
opening week 1 against the Cowboys. Yeah,
I understand, the circumstances the Giants are in this season, but even if the Giants were a really good team or a contending team, I would hate division games week 1 just because I feel like it takes time for a team to fully come together, even the great ones. So playing a division game opening week, it just sets a terrible precedent for the rest of the season because, you're just not fully there yet. Number 2, it's against a team that is a playoff contending team, not necessarily a Super Bowl contending team. I know they were the number 1 seed in the AFC last year, but the AFC's changed a lot. Number 3, they don't have a great quarterback. They have a okay average quarterback, which I think will set a good bar to see where our defense is. It'll be one thing if you're facing Aaron Rodgers in week 1, but no, you're facing Ryan Tannehill. And then number 4, it's on the road. I love to open up on the road just because that means you play more home games down the stretch. So those 4 reasons, I love the week 1 opponent against Tennessee. It's going to be a good starting test for the defense just to see where they are, especially the secondary. It's a different Tennessee Titan team. No A.J. Brown, obviously the first-round pick. Treylon Burks, which, by the way, is weird because Treylon Burks is like a light version of A.J. Brown.
Exactly why they picked him, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see Derrick Henry come back from the foot injury. How is he going to look? Is he going to be the same Derrick Henry? I think so. And there's a lot of pressure on Ryan Tannehill. If Ryan Tannehill struggles, how quickly before Tennessee fans are calling for Malik Willis. I think Ryan Tannehill is pretty lucky that he plays in a small market, because if he played in a much larger market, they'll be calling for Malik Willis a lot earlier.
Sure.
So, look, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a good start for the Giants. Really, really good opponent. With that said, I don't think it'll be a great weekend for the Giants.
No.
What's Tennessee's ceiling, in your opinion?
Oof.
For me, it's what?
I think the wild card.
Yeah. I think Indianapolis is going to win the division.
I agree. I don't think that's controversial.
There's a lot of pressure in Tennessee right now. Indianapolis right now. They have to win a division with all the quarterback shit they've been going through. I think wild card. I would say they're a playoff team.
Yep. So safe to say we have the Giants, but we both have the Giants losing week one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
it'll be a low scoring game. Might have a chance to win the game late, but I'm going to go with the Titans.
Okay.
Week two. It's a home game, home opener against the Carolina Panthers. Even though I do like the Panthers this season, mm-hmm. I do think Baker is going to thrive there, and I do like their defense. I'm actually going to go with the Giants in this game. I think they're going to win their home opener this year.
Okay.
How about you?
So you are currently 1-1.
Yes.
I am going 0-2.
All right.
For the reasons that you just mentioned. I think the Panthers have a very underrated defense, especially now that they have some guys healthy. And the number one theme for the Giants this season is going to be, can the linebackers hold up? Can the secondary hold up? You're going to be going up against a healthy Christian McCaffrey and Baker Mayfield, who, listen, the guy's gotten a lot of shit over the last 2 years, but if you just look at him for what he is, like, he is a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback.
I'd take him over Ryan Tannehill for a year.
I would take him over Ryan Tannehill as well, especially when you factor in age. But that is going to be another test for a Giants secondary and linebacking group covering Christian McCaffrey, covering DJ Moore. It's not going to be easy. So I have them starting 0-2. And
again,
week three we go.
0-2 again.
Yeah.
All right, week three, Monday Night Football, hosting the Dallas Cowboys, a struggling, injury-riddled Dallas Cowboy team.
Yeah.
With that said, I think Dak is an above-average quarterback, definitely better than Tannehill and Baker Mayfield. And I think going up against a guy like Dak who will be able to move the ball, even without Tyron Smith, I'm going to go with the Cowboys in this. I think this is a loss for the Giants.
I agree.
All right.
Shocker. Yes.
Oh, man.
0-3.
0-3.
Yes.
You think they're going to be calling for Brian Daboll's head at 0-3?
Maybe. I mean, they shouldn't, but.
Week four against.
But I will say, though, I do think that Cowboys game is going to be competitive. Like, very competitive.
Oh, I think all these games are going to be. They're going to be competitive in a majority of these losses. I do think that.
I think especially it's going to be prime time at home, division opponent. You're going to have a healthy Thibodeau, hopefully. A healthy Aziz, hopefully. That defensive line up against Dak, who honestly, coming off that ankle injury last year, was not nearly as mobile as he used to be. And, you know, you're good on the interior of the defensive line. Hopefully stuff the run game a little bit. Cowboys offensive line's banged up. I think it'll be close.
I think the big thing is this Tyron Smith loss is huge for the Cowboys.
Yes.
If you look at Dak's numbers with Tyron Smith as a left tackle and without Tyron Smith as a left tackle, there's a huge difference. I mean, he has struggled in the past. And that's why they went out and signed 40-year-old Jason Peters. Because there was no replacement that they could put. So eventually Jason Peters will take over at the left tackle spot. When that is, I don't know. So you got him at 0-3 through the first 3 weeks. I got him at 1-2. Week four, hosting the Chicago Bears. And I do think they win this game.
I agree. The Bears are atrocious.
It's 4 weeks away, but I'm so comfortable picking them here. I think Chicago is going to be a mess this season. They have no offensive line. They have no receivers, new coaching staff. Their defense, I don't think, is going to be good, although I do like some of the pieces in their secondary. But I got the Giants here, and I think they'll be 2-2. And fans will be feeling really, really comfortable about their team. So this is their first win of the season, according to Ethan. So Ethan has them. Yeah.
1-3.
Right. So Ethan has
You are 2-2.
Yeah, Ethan has him at 1-3. I have him at 2-2. Week 5 in London, I'm not even going to talk a lot about it. They're going to lose to the Packers.
They are, yeah.
Thankfully, it's in London and far, far away from us. But yeah, got them losing to the Packers in London, and so do you. So you got them at 1-4. I got them at 2-3. Week six versus the Ravens. This is an important game because I'm going to be there.
And that's the only reason it's important.
But they are not going to win that game. So I have them at 2-4. And Ethan has them at 1-5 after week six.
Yes.
And this is going to be around the time when people start looking more and more at the draft. Which, by the way, can I say something about the whole draft talk is? Anytime somebody from like a Giants content guy or anybody related to the Giants like compliments one of the college quarterbacks, the mentions are just hilarious.
It's an affront to Daniel Jones. Unbelievable.
It's like
all right, we'll take a quick pause real quick because this makes me like very fucking angry.
All right.
Okay?
Yes. Okay. It just looks like somebody cursed their mother the way that people respond. Yes.
Okay, it is so unbelievably simple. I hope I'm not going to use any big words.
Yeah.
I'm going to break it down as simply as I fucking can. You have a quarterback in Daniel Jones who has been injured and bad since he has been drafted by the Giants. You have a brand new general manager, head coach, and offensive coordinator who all agreed not to pick up his fifth-year option. What do new GMs and new head coaches like to do? They like to put their stamp on a team by drafting their guy in the most important position, probably in all of professional sports. They want their quarterback. It is not 90% chance. It is not a 95% chance. It is, barring the world melting down and nuclear war breaking out, 100% chance the Giants will be drafting a quarterback in this upcoming draft. Who it is, I have no idea. But they will absolutely be taking a quarterback in this draft. Fans have every right to be paying attention to this quarterback class and should be able to enjoy these quarterbacks however they want. If it offends you that fans are enjoying Anthony Richardson doing Cam Newton shit in prime time of a college game, log off Twitter, go outside, and take a deep breath because you got far bigger issues than a fan liking Anthony Richardson. It is so simple. That's it.
I just love reading the replies. I do. Nothing pisses me off like that. I just love reading it. Sometimes I might – this just a spoiler alert. Over the course of the season, you know, as the Giants season goes on, we don't expect them to win a lot of games. I will be tweeting about college quarterbacks.
Okay.
And sometimes I might be serious about my opinions on the college quarterbacks. Sometimes I might just put out a generic, holy shit, Anthony Richardson is so great. Holy shit, that was a great throw by Bryce Young. Holy shit, CJ Stroud, you know, what a throw. And I might just do it just to get a rise out of people. Because,
okay. I mean, good luck to you.
I mean, look, bro, we're going to be 2-6, like, you know, 3-7 in, like, November. Like, who the fuck cares who's practicing or not at that point, right? Like, I mean, come on. Like, let's be real. Where have we been every, like, from Halloween? When we start talking about the draft at, like, Halloween.
Sure.
Sometimes even before.
It's going to be before. Listen, I want to add a weekly college quarterback scouting update to every episode. Like,
I'm just saying.
They are taking a quarterback. We should be paying attention to these quarterbacks.
So
it's that simple.
If I'm sitting there watching, I don't know, Florida or Ohio State or Boston College or Alabama or any other place, like Kentucky, Miami, you know, where these premier quarterbacks are playing, like, am I supposed to tweet about whether or not Kadarius Toney is going to play in a meaningless game, you know? Or am I going to...
And you're certainly not going to be scouting the fucking center. No, you're going to be looking at the quarterback.
You know what I'm saying? So, look, this season is going to be long. I think you have to be patient. at the same time, there's going to be other things you can preoccupy yourself with. And one of those things is watching college football, because I think there's a lot of really good quarterbacks in college football.
There are a lot of really good quarterbacks.
Yeah. So if you're a college football fan, if you're an NFL fan of a team who might be drafting one of these guys, I suggest you watch them with your blinders off, because it's a lot better. It's a lot better. All right.
All right.
So at this point in week seven, we got them both losing to the Ravens in week six. I have them at 2-4. You have them at 1-5. Giants enter a week seven game at the Jaguars. And I'm going to say this, and I want people to understand something. I think the Giants, in terms of general manager, nobody upgraded more than the Giants, hands down. When it comes to head coach, I don't care how you fear about Doug Peterson, no team upgraded more than the Jacksonville Jaguars.
None.
And I do think they're going to be a respectable team this year.
I agree.
And I think they're going to beat the Giants.
Really?
The game is going to be in Jacksonville, yeah.
Would not surprise me.
I'm going with the Jags, week seven. They are my if the AFC South is bad, where you can get like 9 wins, which I could totally see it happening, I think all 4 of those teams have a legitimate shot to win the division. I'm dead serious.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe not Houston as much, but I do like Jacksonville a lot.
So I have the Giants winning this one. So all right. Now we are both at 2-5.
Yeah, we're both at 2-5. How about that? We enter week 8 at Seattle. Seattle, a lot like Chicago. Just a fucking mess.
Going to be so bad.
Yeah. Geno Smith winning. Might be starting. As much as I thought, I try to say, okay, maybe Seattle could win this game. No. I think the Giants are a better team. One of the few teams, I think they actually have more talent than the Seattle. I do think the Giants have more talent
than Seattle. Yeah, I don't really think it's a question.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with the Giants winning. They're 3-5. You got them winning.
Me as well.
Yeah, we're
3-5.
By the way, I did this beforehand. We're not. This is not
something. No. Yeah, I'm doing this on the fly also. Right.
Week 9, their bye week. Then they come back and they play home game against the Texans. I know I just talked about the Texans possibly winning a lot of games, a lot more games than people think. But I do think a home game against the Texans, I'm going to go with the Giants in this game.
Me as well. So we are
4-5. Yep. How about that? 4-5, right at the tip of 500. Week 11, Detroit Lions. This is the game I sort of went back and forth with between the Texans and the Lions. I do think they're going to lose one of those two games coming out of the bye. But I'm going to go with a loss against the Lions.
Really? Okay. So you have them at 4-6.
Yes. You have them winning
this game. I have 5-5, yeah.
Wow. That'll be the first time they were 500. I have to look. It's been a long time. So you got them at 5-5 going into Thanksgiving. I got them at 4-6. I think both those records, the majority of the fan base will be feeling pretty good, right? 4-6, 5-5 going into December. You know, you'll see the Giants sort of in the hunt, right? That wild card. When Fox puts that graphic up, Giants going to be there 4-6, you know, in the hunt. People will like that a lot. Thanksgiving game against the Dallas Cowboys. Just don't see it. Going to go with the loss there. That's going to put
me
them
as
at
well.
4-7.
And you I got 5-6.
5-6. Week 13 versus the Commanders. This game is actually to be determined. They don't know if they're going to play this game Saturday or Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah. They could play it on Wednesday for all I care. I got the Giants winning this game.
I will also take the Giants winning that game.
Wow. So, hey, Ethan, 500. There we go. How about that? 6-6.
You are now 5-7, and I am 6-6.
Yeah, look at that. They can't call you a hater no more, man.
No.
You got them 6-6 going into December. Come on, man.
And this is where it starts to get ugly.
Yeah, tell me about it. Week 14 against the Eagles, a loss.
I agree. I think the Eagles, we spoke about this with Warren Sharp, and I agreed with him. The Eagles, I think it's their division to lose. I think outside of Jalen Hurts, who I think is pretty mid, they have a generally talented roster.
I think Jalen Hurts is their only question mark going into the season.
Agree, and I honestly think that they might have a strong enough roster where they can sort of mask some of his terribleness.
I would say Jalen Hurts in the running back room is probably their only question mark. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, if Jalen Hurts balls, the running game will be fine.
Yeah.
They're really stacked roster. I'm not as high as people are on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I'm not as high on him, but I do think he is an upgrade to what they had before. And you got a secondary with Gardner-Johnson and then Darius Slay, James Bradbury, three of the four guys. Pretty good secondary, and they do have some really good pass rush. And then obviously their first-round pick, Jordan Davis, who's it's a large human being.
He's a freak, and I got a lot of shit for like complimenting that pick.
Yeah.
People are going to regret that. All right, so you have him 5-8. I got 6-7.
Yeah. Week 15 at the Commanders. I do apologize, by the way. That Week 13 game is a Sunday game. The Week 15 game against the Commanders
is TBD.
But I got him losing that game. Splitting as well. The Commanders. So I got him at 5-9. You got him at 6-8. And you said this is where it starts to spiral, and you can see it when you look at how they close out the season. Week 16 at the Vikings. I do think the Vikings could win the NFC North. I think they're going to be a good team. I like Kevin O'Connell a lot.
Yeah, that offense is going to be really good.
Mike Zimmer was really bad. Mike Zimmer was like Dave Gettleman in a sense, really wanted to play football like it was like the 60s.
Yeah.
I like the Vikings this season. I think they're going to be a wild card team, and I think they're going to win this game. So I got the Giants at 5-10. You got them at losing this game, right?
I do, 6-9.
6-9. Nice. All right. Week 17 versus the Colts. Again, you look at the Giants' season, especially their, you know, from like week 14 to 18, or actually week 12 to week 18. Outside of the Commanders, they're facing teams that are going to be playing for the playoffs. You know, with the Cowboys twice, exactly. The Eagles twice, Vikings, Colts late in the season. So I don't see them winning against the Colts. So I got a loss there, putting the Giants at 5-11.
Yep, and I got 6-10.
All right. And when they close out against the Philadelphia Eagles, this is where I've sort of gone back and forth with. But because I'm not ready to crown the Eagles as winners of the NFC East, I'm not going to say, well, this is the game where the Eagles might be resting their rosters and I could see the Giants getting their sixth win. I've had the Giants at 5-12 for the entire summer.
Okay, and here we are.
Nothing has changed over the course of the last 12 weeks. Specifically last 4 weeks with training camp. They just look like, and Peter King said it best, I'm going to steal this line. It just looks like a team that has 53 guys. At the time he said 90, but now that they cut down to 53, that are auditioning for a roster in 2023. Now, obviously, some of the draft picks, you know, they're going to be here next year, but the majority of this roster it's basically a one-year audition. And what the Giants are trying to figure out is who's going to be here for the long haul, who's going to be a part of the foundation, and who isn't. And I think that's what's the important part of a year one rebuild, is you figure out who's a part of your future. And I think 5-12 is where the Giants will be. I understand it's an easy schedule. I won't be surprised if some people say 7 wins. I won't be surprised if they can get to 7 wins, even though they've never, you know, the last time they won 7 games was 2016. You know, since then they've been 5-4, 5-6. So 5-12 is where I think they'll finish. But like I said, yeah, I mean, sure, maybe they can get the Lions in week 11. Maybe I'm wrong about the Jaguars, and maybe that's 7 right there. But the way you're looking at that game is the same way that fan base is looking at
us. Is looking at us, yeah. Exactly.
So yeah. 5-12, that's where I got him, and I believe you got him at 6-11.
No, I think we're both at 5-11. I do have 6-11.
6-11, yep. So you have.
Wow, look at that. The tables have turned.
That's the first time, right? I think you've had him at more wins than I have. So yeah, Ethan, 6-11. Weiss, 5-12. That's what this season is going to be, man. It's going to be tough. But as I said when we first started, it's a very young roster. A lot of new players, new offensive system, new defensive system. Just to put a picture on it, right? Like just to make people understand. Saquon Barkley is probably the Giants' most prized draft pick, right? I mean, I know you're going to laugh, but I'm just saying in terms of like assets.
I know what you mean.
Right? Yeah. Like, this is essentially he's under the most pressure, I think, than any other player in this locker room, excluding the quarterback. Because Saquon Barkley, if he has a great year, which I do think Saquon will have a really good year, the difference is like $40 million. Because if he has a season like his rookie season, some team is going to give him north of $10 million.
Yeah. Right?
If he has a season like he's had the last couple years, you're looking at $7 million, $8 million a year. Might have to take another one-year deal. So you got your prized player essentially having a one-year audition. That's exactly what this team is. It's 53 guys auditioning to be on an NFL roster next year. And nobody really is excluded outside of probably the guys that they drafted in, you know, in the higher rounds the last couple years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Okay.
You want to do some
gambling
stuff?
Should we do some let me pull it up from our good friend Will. He actually sent me a whole sheet of Giants props. Let's see if this works here. I would like to open. And here we go. Okay. Daniel Jones. Let's start with the quarterback.
Of course. Always start with the quarterback.
Over under for total passing yards. 3,513.
Ooh. That's tough, man. I wouldn't even touch that if I'm... Whew. 3,500 passing yards. Man, oh man. He's never thrown for 3,500 yards in his career. A lot of that's because he was injured. And 11 games last year.
Yeah, we're assuming that everyone's healthy.
Yes, I do think he'll hit 3,500.
I agree. I think between them being in a modern offense and the fact that they will be in a negative game script due to their secondary for a large portion of the games. I mean, especially like if you look at like the Ravens, the Packers, the Colts, like teams that could run it up on you, I really think that they'll be in passing mode a lot. So I will take over on that. Well,
and the over-under was what, like 35?
35-13.
And we're both going over.
Yep.
All right.
Passing touchdowns, 21.5.
Passing TDs, 21.5. I'm going to go over.
I will as well.
I think this season they're going to lose a lot of games, like 31-34.
Agreed.
30-27.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go over and you're going over, all right?
Yep.
That's a pretty good year for Daniel Jones.
You know what? Some other team will be happy to have him, I hope. All right, let's do Saquon. Oh, we actually have we have Daniel Jones rushing yards.
All right.
350.
I'm going to go under.
That's tough.
I'm going to go under.
I do think that they'll have more designed runs for him in this offense. And as our good friend Warren Sharp will go on to tell us, that the most efficient play in the entire NFL is a quarterback scrambling.
I was actually having a conversation with somebody about football last weekend, and because we did the interview last week, and I had a conversation with somebody about football this weekend, and I actually brought that up. I was like, did you know?
He probably sounds so smart.
And he was like, I did not know that, but that makes sense. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to go under. 350 is a lot.
I'll agree with you. I just think with the injury concerns, they might be a little conservative on the design.
That's
runs.
Why I got him over. So, I mean, I got him under. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley. Let's see. So, rushing yards, the line is 900.
I think he's a 1,000-yard rusher.
I'm going to go under.
Really?
Yeah. I think if he does have a good season, a majority of that is going to come from the passing game.
Actually, yeah. You know what? Because I do think the majority of his success is going to come in the passing game.
Like, if he has the season that you think he's going to have this year, like, you're probably looking at, like, 800 rushing yards, yes. 750 or 800 receiving yards, like, yeah. 11 total touchdowns.
Yeah. That's why I'm not a gambler, but, yeah, I'm going to go under. You said it was 900, right?
900 rushing yards.
All right.
So yeah, I will be going under. And then Saquon Barkley rushing touchdowns, 7.5.
Rushing touchdowns, 7.5. I got it right at 7, so I'm gonna go under.
I will take the under as well. And let's see if we have Saquon Barkley.
Give me receiving rushing, touchdowns.
Receiving. I can't find it. I'm doing this on my phone. So it might be. I have like rushing and receiving, which is 1,300.
Combined rushing and receiving. I'm going over.
I am going over also.
That's easy money.
no such thing. But yeah. All right. So there's that. And then I think the only other person on this spreadsheet, and I looked on DraftKings too, they don't have anything for Giants receivers because who the fuck is going to be betting on Wandale Robinson and
Kenny
Golladay, but I do have Kadarius Toney receiving touchdowns at 4.5, receiving yards at 775.
So you said receiving touchdowns 4.5. Ooh man, if you were to tell me, I probably would have said right around 4. So can he get the 5th? Yeah, I'll give him 5 receiving touchdowns. It's saying a lot considering he had 0 last year.
Yeah.
I'll go 5. And then the receiving yards, what, 750?
Yeah.
775,
sorry.
Going to go under.
Okay. I'm going to take the over. I'm going over on Tony.
I'm going to go under.
Okay. All right, that's all I got in that spreadsheet. I'm trying to see what else I have.
Who's your Super Bowl prediction?
Ooh.
All right, I've had my AFC one since, like, the spring. Like, I've been confident with this team. I got the Bills in the AFC.
Yeah.
And in the NFC, you're going to laugh at me. I had San Francisco up until they decided to keep Jimmy G.
Why would that change your mind?
I just think it's just another added layer of pressure on the young quarterback. Because if he has one bad game or two bad games or a bad half, you just know the talk is going to be there. And I just think it's a lot of pressure on a young guy. And I even had Trey Lance as my dark horse MVP.
I'm a big Trey Lance guy, as you know.
Yeah. And once they decided that they're going to go and keep Jimmy Garoppolo, which, look, I get it. You know, they have the best backup in the league, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But there's another layer to that story that I don't think people understand, is the fact that he was the starting quarterback and that roster is trying to win now. And if Trey Lance, who's young, struggles, you know people are going to be saying, why don't we just put in Jimmy Garoppolo?
Sure.
And it's just another added layer of pressure. And it's not like I'm doubting Trey Lance. I just think as a young quarterback in that, like, typically young quarterbacks take control of bad teams. He's taking control of a really good team and there's really high expectations. So like that learning curve, like they basically have to be on the opposite end of it right now. It has to be over with. So I was San Francisco, but I'm going to go back to the LA Rams, and I have no confidence in that. I know Matt Stafford's shoulder's fucked up, or his elbow, whatever the fuck you want to call it. I'm just pissed the 49ers decided to keep Jimmy G, because I really, really, really was comfortable with the San Francisco pick.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go back to my comfort pick, which is, you know, where I'm least at, and that's the Rams. But I totally expect to be wrong. It's just because I don't think Green Bay is going to do it, and I'm done picking them. I don't think Tampa. I think there's, you know, a lot of change there, and I know Brady's still there, but their offensive line is getting weakened, and their defense is sort of not what it used to be, I think. even though I think Todd Bowles is going to do a good job. But I'm just going to go with the Rams and the Bills, and the Bills winning the Super Bowl, and Josh Allen being league MVP. And, yeah, that's where I am.
I'm going to change it up just for the sake of changing it up and not just be – I'm not just being contrarian.
That's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to do, man. I wanted to be a contrarian.
I don't think, like, anyone – like, this would surprise anyone is basically what I'm trying to say. Like, they're not the favorite. Like, if you ask me to put real money on it, like, I might hesitate, but, like, it could be a good hedge opportunity. I'm going with the AFC, the Ravens.
Okay.
Lamar in a contract year.
Yep.
They're not giving him the guaranteed money he wants. Scorched earth, big season.
This is what happened with Flacco. They didn't want to pay Flacco. Then he has that great playoff run, and then boom.
So I'm going to go with the Ravens from the AFC. I think they beat out the Bengals and win that division.
They were the number one seed before Lamar got hurt. Remember that last year?
Yep.
Beat Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. And from the NFC, I'm going Green Bay.
Still going with Green Bay.
Still going with Green Bay. Listen, man, I'm a Rodgers guy. What can I say?
After that playoff Ayahuasca game, Rodgers. After that playoff game, I ripped apart my house.
I was so pissed. I get it.
I was like, I'm never picking this guy and this team ever again.
This, for all we know, this could be his last season.
I don't care.
I think he's a single man now. He's doing drugs.
I don't care.
He's coming out against vaccines. Like, this is going to be his year. So I'm going Ravens Packers.
So what you're saying is Aaron Rodgers wins Super Bowl and there's like a big political thing there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, That would be awesome.
I saw clips of his Rogan interview. You can't tell me that man isn't going scorched earth on everything and everyone.
If he wins the Super Bowl, yeah.
No, he's just on his way there. Oh, yeah. He's playing fucking pissed.
I think if he wins the Super Bowl, there's a good chance he's on Tucker Carlson talking about why why not taking the vaccine was like the reason why he got through and won a Super Bowl. Another one.
Yeah.
But I just can't do it. I can't do it with Green Bay anymore. I can't live through another season. I did it the last 2 years. And I'm just not doing it anymore.
Okay.
So I got Buffalo, and I wanted to go 49ers so badly, but I'm going to go back to the Rams. I have zero confidence in that pick. And I got Josh Allen winning league MVP. So that means who you got league MVP? Lamar again?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Then they'll have to give him a guaranteed
contract. Dude, he's good. He's so good. He's
very good.
Yep. Dude, all right, I'm just going to rant real quick because we're already going on like 47 minutes and we still have our Warren Sharp interview.
Yeah.
But like... It just blows my mind that when people talk about, like, the 2018 draft and they're like, oh, you wanted a quarterback. You know what? There was over a 50% chance that had Gettleman selected a quarterback if he had his pick of the whole litter, right? Yeah. And even if you say, okay, take Baker out of it, there's exactly a 50% chance that he would have wound up with a stud franchise quarterback in either Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. And I was a huge fucking Lamar guy, if you recall.
Yeah.
When he was there at the end of the first, I was begging them to trade up.
Right. Actually, the Eagles thought they were going to trade up.
Yeah. I mean, I was all about Lamar. Still am. Big Lamar fan. I actually have him on my Dynasty team.
So. I think the weird conversation, you know, like every time a quarterback is like a player is in the process of getting paid, there's always like that weird take that people have of like, you don't have to play this guy, you know, and they make up some weird reason. Like the crazy thing I'm reading right now, like, cause you know, I live in Baltimore and I listen to the radio and I follow Ravens Twitter a lot. Like people are like, hey, we can get the same production out of like Tyler Huntley. We don't need to pay Lamar Jackson. Trade him for like pick. I'm like, listen, like, you might not – the Ravens need to be blessed that they went from – like I know Joe Flacco through the back end of his career with the Ravens, like it was bad. But he did – they were consistently in the playoffs and playing for a Super Bowl, and they did win a Super Bowl. And I just think that, you know, you might not want to put yourself in quarterback purgatory. Take care of Lamar. I think he should probably get an agent, just my opinion. But, hey, you want to do all that yourself, I don't care. I'm not one of those people that are like – every NFL player needs to have an agent. But yeah, I do like Baltimore this year. I do like them a lot this year. I just like Buffalo more. Maybe it's my biases towards you know,
that anti-Ravens. Yeah.
No. I think it's because we just hired, you know, the Bills offensive coordinator.
Oh, sure.
You know, maybe that I'm drinking that Bills juice, but
maybe. Hey.
Yeah.
But hey, maybe without Dable they struggle.
Maybe.
So.
Or maybe they're successful and the Giants offense struggles and people say, "Look, it wasn't Brian Daboll. Yeah, it was Josh Allen."
Well, maybe the Giants will get their own Josh Allen.
Oh man, now you're talking.
His name is Anthony Richardson.
Maybe.
All right, so that's it. That's our season predictions. We got
Let's get to our interview.
We got a. What were you had 5-11.
5-11.
And I had 6-12.
5-12.
Sorry, 5-12, and I had 6-11. Okay.
Yeah.
And we did the over/unders. We ranted and raved about random shit. And now here is our interview with Warren Sharp. All right, we now welcome in our very special guest. If you're on Twitter and social media, you definitely know him. You can find him on Twitter at Sharp Football. His website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. The man, the myth, the mustache, Warren Sharp. Warren, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, for sure, guys. Certainly the Giants are an interesting hot button team around the NFL with what happened historically and what we're going to store for this year. So I'm happy to talk about the team with you guys and some of the expectations this year.
Absolutely, especially the last 4 years and the Dave Gettleman tenure, which I'm sure we'll get into. One question I have for you just right off the bat. I know from listening to some older interviews that you've done, namely on Pardon My Take, that you do some consulting for a lot of NFL teams, and we're not going to, you know, do what they do. You know, don't blink for the rest of the episode if you're consulting for the Giants, that type of stuff. But I am curious because there is really a split between the old school and the new school mentality in terms of analytics and building a football team successfully versus what the Giants have tried to do the past few years. Just out of my own curiosity, and I'm sure some of the listeners as well, how often do you get pushback? Obviously, like, there is that sort of confidence if a team contracts you to come in and give your analysis. But in terms of the coaching staff and maybe some of the older heads in the building, is there pushback? Is there a lot of pushback? What's your overall experience been giving that very analytical take and bringing it to the football field?
Yeah, for me, the good news is by not being employed by any team, I'm not subject to that, right? They're not going to hire me if they don't want my own opinions. They're Fair not enough. Going to pay me if they don't want me to. And they know pretty much who I am and what I stand for prior to, you know, signing a deal. So they know this guy is going to try to provide insights. And most of what I do is on a weekly basis, trying to help this team win their next upcoming game by sharing strategy advice from play calling to strategies to coaching and et cetera. And then some tendencies that I'm noticing and some things that might need to be tweaked or improved upon. So it's, you know, I am not like in the booth with the headset, go kick, making those types of decisions where then there'd be a meeting afterwards that why didn't we do this? Well, we don't trust the numbers enough here. This is more of a gut decision and having issues like that. So thankfully I don't have to deal with that level of it. There's always times when I'm making suggestions and I see it unfolding in a way on the field and I'm like, okay, great. They're doing, you know, more or less what some of the things that I was suggesting and I feel good when it works. There's other times when it's not, they're not doing quite as much. Or why does the quarterback keep taking these drops? We need to do something. You know, I was suggesting something else and it didn't happen. And all I can do is continue to reiterate my position, but there never really is like come to Jesus moments or hardcore discussions about that where I'm on one side, they're on the other, and we're having a full out argument about something. That to date has not happened yet.
Do you have aspirations of like joining a front office or being on a coaching staff? Is that sort of one of your goals that you have, you know, put forth for yourself?
Not really. Because honestly, it's any of those positions are more or less pay cuts, unless you're like an OC, you know, like if you're right. High enough, right, then you're getting paid enough. But to even run an analytics department or to be a, you know, someone that's full-time employed by one single team, most of that is going to be a pay cut. And it's not something that I'm really interested in doing. Now, if I get to the point where I've had my fun in sports betting. I've had my fun in everything else that I do. And I just want to sort of semi-retire, but just like work with some people that I really enjoy working with and only do that maybe down the road. So it's something that, you know, obviously I guess I could say 8 to 10 years ago, I thought that might be a cool goal, a cool job. You know, oh my God, that would be awesome to work with the team and do this. But now that I've been able to just get involved as a consultant with a few different teams, and I've had different offers come my way, but I've thought over them and I've decided that this is the best strategy for me and the best place to be right now. And if it did come about down the road, then that might happen, but no time in the near future would I want to give up everything else I'm doing to just go and work for one particular team.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is, speaking of GMs, is, you know, obviously the Giants, the big move they made this, you know, this past offseason was going from Dave Gettleman to Joe Shane. I think I spoke about this to somebody earlier and I said Joe Shane could work with the blindfold on and he'd still do a better job with Gettleman. So what are your thoughts on the Giants, where they are, what the future is? You know, if they were to ask you for your advice, what would you tell them?
Well, it starts with a quarterback and a head coach and a philosophy, right? Like that's pretty much, you know, if your team's going to be good or have the potential of being good, if you have those boxes ticked off. And right now I feel like you got the right philosophy because you got the right coach and the GM in there. Finally, in my opinion, what we still don't know about is do you have the quarterback? And so the number one goal this season is going to be discover if we have that right quarterback. And if you don't, then you have to go out and get them, that individual. And that's the top priority of this staff, is to figure out where we can get this franchise quarterback. And obviously we'll talk maybe later about the benefits of having this guy on his rookie deal and everything else you can do with your roster when that happens. But in regards to like thinking about the past and Dave Gettleman and what this Giants team has been, you know, I wrote about it a lot in my book and I've commented on it a lot publicly, but it's hard to find a more inept way. There are a couple, but it's hard to find a more inept way to run a franchise into the ground than they did. I mean, a lot of their top picks, like their top couple of picks, they're not even signed to next season, right? Like Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones, there was no desire to actually go out. And if you found a decent guy at these positions, you would be obviously extending them before their contract comes up. And there's no desire to do that. You have a team that has underperformed for 5 straight years. I know Gettleman, I don't know that he was there in 2017, but this team has underachieved against the Vegas win total. Vegas always sets projected win totals. And for 5 consecutive years, 2017, 18, 19, 20, in 21, this team has gone under their win total. I think that's the only team in the NFL that has done that. This
and
team,
and by the way, every single year we do a season preview, and one of us is always or typically on the right side of this. The other is typically on the wrong side of the win total. But I don't think that there's a fan base, maybe the Dallas Cowboys, that Vegas has made more money off of over the last 4 years than Giants fans who say their win total is 6.5. What? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Now sports betting there is legalized, so it's going to be a lot easier for all you
for people New to lose money. Yeah.
Put your hard-earned money down on this team trying to support them. And look, beyond just like, okay, we haven't gone over the win total, this was the statistic that really is mind-boggling to me, that not at any point in any season over the last 5 years have you ever had a winning record. Like, you've never been 1-0. You've never been 3-2. You've never been 5-4. Like, it's absurd that every single morning, I know back when I was growing up, we did this. So, you know, you guys are younger than I am. And some people who listen to your podcast are probably even younger than you guys. But, you know, we used to get the sports page and I, you know, the paper comes in. I would always go to the sports page and look at the standings. Like, I didn't have an iPhone when I was like in elementary school and middle school. And when I wanted to look at the standings, I'm going to the sports page. And like, I can't imagine for the last 5 years that the Giants fans are sitting there and they're never like even above 500, not even like for 1 week. You can never say our team has a winning record. So this whole thing has been an utter disaster. And the thing that you guys, I'm sure, have gotten across to the fan base, but that I can only emphasize if you've already done this, is that this is not going to turn overnight. You are pointed in the right direction, but we can't get upset with Brian Daboll or your GM if we don't start off 3-0, if we don't have a winning record this year. There are going to be growing pains, in large part because of this dog shit roster that they've put together with all these ridiculous cap hits for all of these players. It's hard to build out a roster when you're working with ingredients somebody else bought. I know that that's the Bill Parcells quote, but they're working with ingredients somebody else bought, and now their arm, you know, one arm is tied behind their back, and they're trying to make a complicated recipe here to beat other successful programs out there. It's just a massive disadvantage what they're working with. And it's not just this year, but probably even into next year, that you're not going to see this team really get the guys that they want and be able to afford them on the cap hit because of what has been left over to them when Dave Gettleman was here over the last several years.
Yeah, and this is an audio-only podcast, but for people who are listening, I mean, the animated steam was coming out of Warren's ears as he was recapping the Gettleman era. Yeah, I mean, that's a point that we've hammered home for weeks at this point. I think one of the first episodes we did for this coming season, you know, my opinion is that I'm very excited for this upcoming season because it's one of the only ones where I don't have to be stressed out every week, right? We sort of understand where the team is. They're going to be awful. There's going to be growing pains. You know, we're pretty confident at this point. We've got a head coach with a good record. We've got an offensive coordinator coming from one of the more exciting offenses in the league. And by all accounts, every single beat writer, media person that we've had on has said that Joe Shane has learned from one of the best team builders in the league. So for me, I can't speak for the rest of the fan base. And you know, being a fan, part of that is even when you say you're not going to care and that you're going to be relaxed, you're going to get emotional regardless. But overall, at least knowing that this team is heading in the right direction eases the stress level a little bit, especially because with Gettleman, it was okay, great. Like, I know the team's going to be bad, but what is he going to do to somehow make it worse, both for him and whoever comes in eventually to replace him? And we're seeing that this year. I mean, listen, we were two guys who were excited about Kenny Golladay, admittedly a foolish signing, but we were against the Leonard Williams. We didn't want Daniel Jones. We didn't want Saquon Barkley. And now we're sitting here staring at the mess. I do want to ask your general opinion of Daniel Jones. I think the organization has pretty much said it without saying it, not picking up the fifth-year option. New GM, new head coach, a lot of other new people higher up inside the organization who probably want to put their own stamp on this team by either drafting someone, or you never know who becomes available in the trade market or in free agency. But what's your opinion of Daniel Jones based on what you've seen from this upcoming draft class? Do you think there are going to be a lot of options on the table for the Giants, especially for a team whose win total is 7?
Yeah, I think the reality is, for me at least, the jury is out on Daniel Jones more than it is with a lot of other people. You know, everybody, all walks of life, is so judgmental right away. You know, first impressions, very judgmental. After one season, my mind is made up, you know, that type of thing. And I really do think that Daniel Jones has been in such terrible situations that I am trying to keep a very open and objective mind as to what is this guy, based on what I see this season, being put into better situations. And we could talk about that. Like, look, the Giants, and this gets to Jason Garrett, this gets to the head coach, this gets to a little bit of Daniel Jones, but primarily the coaching and the strategy. This team, by looking at the data, to me, clearly had no desire to emphasize early down efficiency.
And you tweeted this yesterday, yes. And I did want to bring this up. I have it screenshotted and pulled up because I don't know if you know this, but it became, I can't even call it a running joke because it was just so painful when it happened. But every single time the Giants had an incompletion, were sacked, or ran for 1 or 2 yards on first down for the last 4 years, it has been great. They're going to run on second and nine, second and 10, second and 14, whatever it is. Can't wait for them to put their young, inexperienced quarterback in third and long for the fifth time this game.
And had a terrible offensive line.
With a terrible offensive line. Play calling that doesn't make any sense. Sorry to interrupt, but I had to bring that up.
Yeah,
it's a running joke in the fan base.
Yeah, interrupt away. I mean, that's I did not realize that that was a running joke, but I'm looking at the numbers and I tweeted it out, obviously, that over the last 3 years, after a second down incompletion or a sack, basically, you know, I didn't want to write this because it's too hard for some people to understand, but that's like a failed pass attempt, right? Like after you try to pass the ball on first down and fail because you gain no yards because it's incomplete or you took a sack, on second down, the Giants have run the ball at the second highest rate of any team in the NFL, 56% of the time. And we know that the NFL average is well below 50%. And they're sitting here at number two in the NFL. You also look at the fact that like this team had no desire to avoid third downs based upon that early down play calling. It totally felt to me like, let's get into third down and manageable. Let's get a first down. Let's get into third down and manageable. Let's get a first down. And I could tell you, go look at drive data and tell me how many points are scored on drives where you're converting multiple third downs. It does not happen very often. It is hard to convert third downs. You need to try to bypass third downs. And based on the data and the research that I had done like almost a decade ago, I started to uncover just the importance of bypassing third downs. And I got my hands on the play-by-play data. You know, this is a while ago, but I'm parsing it out and looking at early down efficiency because back when I'm looking at this, you know, publicly, there aren't as many people that like have play-by-play data that are digging through this. And so most every single analyst out there is looking at like, well, what's this offense? What do they rank in efficiency? Oh, well, total yards per game. That's not good enough. Let's look at like yards per attempt. You know, it was like we were at the entrance of trying to understand what stats really matter. And I started looking at like bypassing third downs. And there were some people that were looking at that as well, but not quite as many when I started, you know, like I said, a while ago. And I realized the correlation between avoiding third downs to having a great offense to then having great success on the field. And the recipe is pass the ball on early downs to skip third down. You do not want to put your quarterback in third down. And even if you are there's a little bit of the snake chasing his tail thought here. Like if you're a good coach and you've got a great quarterback, you're probably going to take advantage of that quarterback and pass the ball a lot early. But the reality is even for teams that have bad quarterbacks, you still want to pass the ball early for the reason that you just mentioned, which is, we may not have the perfect offensive line, and we also know that our quarterback isn't perfect. So why do we want him to be predictable offensively? With the current rules construct in the NFL, the only way that the offense can give chips back to the defense or can put themselves slightly behind the eight ball is by being predictable. And trust me, the only way that you're going to be predictable offensively, other than tendencies and shit like that, is third and five, third and four, third and seven, defense knows you're passing the ball, right? And if the defense knows the type of play that's coming before the snap occurs, that gives them a little bit of an advantage. So, you know,
what I'm hearing is you're against Joe Judge running back-to-back quarterback sneaks at his own tweet.
I'm against that.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes, I'm strongly against that.
Okay. My pea brain is understanding you correctly.
And for the record, for people who didn't see that tweet, could you tell us where the Bills and the Chiefs were ranked? I just say that because Dable and Kafka being running the offense here, just to put into hindsight for people.
Exactly. So in the last 3 years, the Chiefs ranked number 31 and the Bills ranked number 23. And I could tell you, if I ran a 2-year sample, the Bills would rank a lot better because, as we know, Brian Daboll sort of had a renaissance in prior to the 2020 season. And so if you look at the Bills stats, 2019 and 2018 with Josh Allen, you're going to see a totally different picture than what happened with this team in 2020 and 2021. So yeah, for sure. The Bills and Daboll, I got some takes on some interesting kind of like coaching pressure that ended up occurring in Buffalo to cause them to run the ball a little bit more than I think Daboll probably would have otherwise liked. But you know, they're not going to have that issue here. There is not going to be any pressure from a senior coach to tell Daboll or Kafka what they need to do and stop you know, passing the ball quite as much and run the ball more, because it stops and ends with Brian Daboll, whatever he wants goes. And then, you know, Mike Kafka coming from the Chiefs, like that was one of the most pass heavy offenses in the NFL over the last several years with Andy Reid. So, I mean, this team, even though the quarterback may not be perfect, you would rather he pass the ball on second and short or first and 10 than third and eight, right? Like that's obvious. And so how do we stay out of third and eight? Well, it's probably, you're probably going to find yourselves in more third and long situations if you're running the ball for a few yards predictably on early downs, or especially on second and 10, second and 11, if you took a sack or something like that, than you would if you are throwing it on those early downs.
Speaking of the running back, obviously Saquon Barkley, probably the most polarized, outside of the quarterback, probably the most polarizing player on the Giants right now, given the fact of where he was drafted, who he was drafted by, and then given the fact that he's in the last year of his deal. Now, I'll admit, I used to be like, hey, if he's a great running back, draft him wherever you want to draft him. I was against the Giants drafting him. But one of the people that opened my eyes to the whole, I'm not going to say running backs don't matter, but the like not drafting a running back high was you, based on the data that you shared over the years. I have been following you for a long time. Can you explain why, for the people that still don't get it, why paying a running back is such a huge mistake?
It's positional value. It's the fact that we only have so much roster cap to allocate to players, and running backs don't control their own destiny nearly as much as people like to think. But let's back up. When we talk about who we're paying and why we're paying these guys, the average run play results in negative EPA, which means negative expected points added. Okay. This means that if you're handing the ball off to your running back, on average, you're putting yourself further away from actually scoring points. So calling a lot of run plays is not ideal to begin with. We want to reduce the amount of rushing the football with a running back as much as we possibly can, because passes, generally speaking, will put you closer to scoring points. And that's what our goal is. So if we already know that rushing is less efficient than passing the football, then within rushing, what actually leads to positive rushes versus negative rushes? Well, for the most part, it's what that O-line does. It's not the running back himself. And there's also sorts of advanced metrics now, rushing yards over expectation and above average and things of that nature, based upon player tracking data and what the offensive line is blocking up. Or you can even look at other stats like yards before contact per rushing attempt. And what you're going to find is that a lot of times you look at like your number one running back and then your number two and number three, and they're all kind of similar in a lot of these statistics. They're not like night and day, the number one guy is better. And the reason is because so much of a running back's production is what his offensive line is blocking and when the team is running the football. And if you can take both of those things, and you don't have to have an ideal or elite running back there, but if you are calling run plays when it's efficient to do so, and you're keeping the defense on its toes, and there are efficient run plays to call, run plays down inside the red zone, particularly when you're using spread formations of like three wide receiver sets, 11 personnel or 10 personnel, and you're spreading the field, then you're handing the ball off to the running back against the light box, or you audible to a run play because the defense is massively playing the pass and they don't have as many guys in the box. And so you can audible to a run play. These are types of runs that are efficient at times, but that's coaching, right? That's coaching. What plays are we going to call and when are we going to call them? So you don't need that elite running back. And what the Giants clearly did is they said, let's draft a guy at the very top. He's got to be the most talented guy, obviously, because we're taking him at that position, and he's going to elevate our offense. In reality, when you then call run plays to use him a lot, you're calling too many runs, which we don't want to do. You're calling them at the wrong time, which we don't want to do. And you're probably not spending enough money on your offensive line because you spent a lot on your running back. And we know that the offensive line plays into it. And then you also have a bad coach. So like everything across the board was going bad for Saquon Barkley. I obviously am optimistic that Saquon hopefully will have a healthier season this year.
Me too.
And produce more out on the field, because you're running him when it's optimal to run him, and you're not running him in these dumb situations where the box is loaded and it's second and 10. But I do think that you don't want to be paying him in the future, right? Like, even if he's great this year, you can't afford to break the bank on him. Hopefully he does really well for you, and you guys, you know, can part ways with him after the season.
So that brings me to my next question. Strictly from a team building perspective, do Giants fans want Saquon Barkley to have a 2018 renaissance, or just be what he's been the last few years, you know, when he's healthy, just not as efficient, whatever? Because you have a lot of fans speculating, well, if he plays well, maybe he's got trade value at some point during the season, or if he plays too well, maybe the organization rethinks it and they do pay him, which, from what you said, not a smart idea, especially in the long term. And obviously, if he just is an average running back, then they're more likely to just let him walk. So obviously, like, from a health perspective, we all hope he stays healthy. We want him to do well. But from a team building perspective, what's the cost benefit analysis here?
That's a good way to term it, cost benefit analysis. But I think the answer is really simple, and Giants fans are going to like it. And it's root for your guys to do well. Like, I think this front office is smart enough to know that we're not going to break the bank to spend money on Saquon Barkley and re-sign him. I wouldn't be sitting here trying to suggest to your fans, like, let's root against him, or let's, oh, he's playing too good this game, that's not good for us. Like, let's hope to see the best Giants product out on the field that we possibly can this upcoming season. Let's hope that all the guys stay healthy, this team plays really well, and God forbid exceeds expectations. But I think that the ownership is not, well, not the ownership, but the
certainly not the ownership. Yeah.
The general manager is going to be smart enough to know we can't afford to spend this amount of money on this guy, even if we're going out and getting a rookie quarterback and drafting him and he's going to be cheap. Like, we cannot be tied down to a running back who has injury history and who's getting a little bit older and who is going to cost us a ton of money.
So trust in Shane.
Trust in Shane and trust in Daboll that, you know, Daboll's going to hopefully run him, even if he starts looking really great. Like, we're not going to just run him a ton in bad situations to run the football. Hopefully they're going to still call intelligent plays, which will make Saquon Barkley look good. And so if you're a Giants fan, hopefully you can win some Saquon Barkley, you know, rushing props or in the betting market, stuff like that. You can root for him as opposed to.
I did see that he was plus 4,000 to lead the league in rushing on one book that I saw, which intriguing enough odds. But
I don't think the Giants are going to be running him enough to put him in a position to do that. But
maybe all purpose.
Maybe maybe all purpose. I just hope that he is healthy. I never, like, people see me on Twitter, people hear me comment on teams in certain ways, and they, oh, this guy hates the Patriots.
Giants fans have come after you a lot the last 4 years. I've seen it.
Yeah,
I've
like different teams come after me a ton for every single thing that I say. And it's funny, it's just like, you know, some Justin Fields stats. Oftentimes I'll just post a Justin Fields stat or stats on anybody. And all I do is just share the statistic, right? And then people immediately say, like, oh, you're rooting against Justin Fields. And then when Justin Fields has a good preseason game, they want to, like, cite to the stats. When I post stats after, like, the second week and the line is not giving him protection. Oh, this sample size stinks. You can't talk about preseason. You're not rooting for Justin Fields. A, I'm rooting for Justin Fields. B, if you're saying that sample size is bad, now you're going to come back and say, oh, well, look at the third preseason game. It, like, most fans just want the analyst to always say positive things about their team, no matter what. And for me, I block all of that out. You can come at me with all of the hate or distaste when I'm negative to your team, but it's not going to change a single thing that I do. What
numbers
I do
never
is
lie.
I objectively try to analyze each team, each coach, and I share that information. Sometimes I have opinion with it. Sometimes I'm just sharing the data. And when I do have opinion, my goal is to open people's eyes to it so that we can rectify things, so that things can be improved. And that's what I don't understand oftentimes about some fan bases, is that, like, they see things that they don't like with their own two eyes, and privately they'll talk to their dad or their neighbors or their friends about this. But then when somebody on a national level calls it out, they feel like they got to defend their team. And it's like, Don't you want it to change? Don't you want to be rooting for a Super Bowl champion? Why should, if a national analyst wants this team to improve in this area or is criticizing these draft picks or the strategy or the philosophy that they're implementing, why should you defend that or argue with that when deep down you want your team to win too? And so that's all I do. I root for efficiency. I root for optimal strategy, optimal gameplay. And I want all the teams to be operating at like the peak level possible with the best staffs that are making the best calls and the players playing the best that they can. I'd never root against teams or for players to fail. But I know it sometimes might appear that way, but the reality is I'm just trying to alert people to the situation so that they realize, hey, it was worse than I thought. Hopefully the team picks up on this and they make some improvements.
Yeah, I think that's all. That's an excellent way to put it, because I've seen Giant fans just come after you. And then I've seen those same Giant fans complain about the things that they come after you about. But real quick, the defense, obviously that's the whole other side of it. I really wanted Patrick Graham to return, and I think so did the Giants, but he didn't. And they have, and my second option was Wink Martindale, because I do like his aggressive style. What are your thoughts on the Giant defense, specifically their pass rush? I do think Ojulari and Thibodeau could make for a great 1-2 punch. Just what are your thoughts on that? I know it's a rebuilding secondary, but overall, what would you say the Giants defense is going to be about this season?
Well, it's going to be about blitzing. I mean, we've already seen that in the preseason with Wink. That's a core philosophy of his. And I really was on the same page with you. I wish Patrick Graham would have stayed. I was quite like disappointed that he left. And my only issue with Wink is just a level of predictability. And how well will this ultimately piece in with this secondary? Because it's different when you're in Baltimore. For one key reason, when you're in Baltimore, you're playing with a lead most of the time. And you also have one of the better secondary groups in the NFL. So you can afford to, you know, passes are coming, right? You know, this team has to pass the ball in the second half because you've got a lead offensively. Your offense put a lead on the scoreboard. Now the defense is playing with a lead and they could go after the quarterback. It becomes a lot more predictable what that other team is going to have to do on different down and distances because they're trailing on the scoreboard. And we have confidence in the secondary members that we have, the talent level of those guys. You know, with your team, I do agree. I am optimistic that you're going to have a better pass rush and you're going to have more success when you get after the quarterback. But I do have concerns on the back end and then the islands that these guys might get placed upon and the situations that might arise with the Giants not playing with a lead. It makes things much more open for the opposing offense, makes it harder to play defense to some extent. And now you're having to cover guys with fewer members in the secondary because you're sending blitzers and it might be difficult. So, you know, I like aggression defensively in general. I also hate prevent defense with a passion. So I'm all for a guy, you know, trying to call plays to aggressively get after the quarterback because, you know, we've kind of alluded to this, but we haven't outright stated it. Passing is way more predictive and a bigger component to winning games than is rushing. And so if you can disrupt that opposing quarterback and get that passing game rattled a little bit, you're going to give boost your odds of winning a game dramatically. So it just has to hit home. And I don't know how it's going to look when the live bullets start firing out there, but you know, it's probably a better hire than average, but it still wasn't my top hire.
Fair enough. Speaking of firing bullets, let's go do a little bit of gambling talk before we let you go. I'm sure you're busy. In terms of the Giants, I guess we're attaching this to our season preview episode, so I can say it, but I do like the under 7 in terms of win total. Agree or disagree?
I'm neutral. I haven't bet the Giants under. I will tell you that I bet the Cowboys under at 10
I like
and a half.
That.
Pretty strongly. And I also therefore bet the Eagles to win the division.
I did as well.
And I've bet that multiple times. I bet that at, you know, numbers that were very close to plus 200. And as the news came out of Smith, their left tackle going down, I continue to bet it again and again and again. So I've got a portfolio that has some really good numbers that are going to beat the close and some numbers that are only going to beat the close by a little bit. But I am totally neutral on the Giants right now.
Yeah, I generally, I agree on the division. I think it's the Eagles to lose at this point. I think they have a pretty easy schedule. Giants, not great. And like you said, with the Cowboys. So we tend to agree there. In terms of both fantasy as well as season-long prop numbers for some of the Giants guys, is there anyone that you've been eyeing?
No, it would have been great to have some Kenny Golladay under back earlier this offseason, but I did not get involved in that. Certainly, it looks like he's struggling a little bit. I love the way that they appear to be using Wandale Robinson. And yes. The issue, though, just becomes like that, based upon my fantasy guy at my website, Rich Rebar, it's like that archetype of player isn't typically like a high use fantasy guy who you can rely on for consistent right. production. It's just like the short, shifty guy. Hopefully he becomes very vital in some key plays throughout the course of a game, whether it's a third down conversion, a unique reverse type play, or some other plays down the field. But in terms of like delivering consistency from a box score, from a fantasy perspective, it might be harder to rely on that archetype. But you know, the other thing that's interesting is Daniel Jones. Look, I didn't know, and I still don't, what to expect, and maybe you guys have your thoughts being closer to the situation, how much of a leash they're going to let Daniel Jones have. There's a couple ways the season can go, right? Like if it starts horrifically for Daniel Jones and Daboll's like, look, I know I'm not going to be using this guy in the future. We are not right. going to re-sign this guy, but I want to see what the rest of our roster can do, and I can't execute my offense with him. There could be a very real chance that they, early on in the season, before a lot of people think, insert Tyrod Taylor into the mix as QB1 to evaluate the rest of that roster, knowing we're already moving on from Daniel Jones.
About a month ago, I would have tended to agree with that. And then I absolutely hated what I saw out of Tyrod Taylor in the preseason. As someone who's been a fan of his the last few years, I thought that obviously he's an upgrade over Jake Fromm. I mean, no one's debating that, but just in terms of overall ability compared to the average starter. And again, I hope I'm not overreacting too much to preseason, but
I'll put it in perspective for you, Warren. I'll put this season in perspective for you. If the Giants, in terms of like what I think, I don't give a rat's ass. If Daniel Jones stinks and we know it, then okay, play Tyrod Taylor. At the end of the day, and I think you nailed it, it's about finding the quarterback. And Tyrod Taylor is not the future. If they play Tyrod Taylor, great. You won't see me saying, why did they pull the plug on Daniel Jones? If they play Daniel Jones the entire season, I won't be like, you know, why didn't they play Tyrod Taylor? At the end of the day, for the Giants this season, the reason why it's such a stress-free season is because we're going to get the answer. There is no more, he needs this, or he needs an offensive line, or he needs a healthy Barkley. No, we are at the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of finding out if Daniel Jones is our quarterback. If he's not, they're going to be picking a quarterback. If he is, then, well, seem to be in a pretty good spot. But in regards to, like, Tyrod Taylor starting a game, or even Davis Webb if they want to give him an opportunity, like, it really, truly, truthfully doesn't matter. And I think Ethan feels the same way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, but maybe to a lesser extent. Like, if Daniel Jones stinks – just let him stink. Like Tyrod Taylor is not your franchise quarterback, so it doesn't matter, you know?
I agree with all of that. The only issue that I have, or the only thing that I'm questioning, is if we want to adequately evaluate the rest of the roster and Daniel Jones cannot run this offense. Again, this is like completely worst case scenario here.
Understood.
Hopefully it never gets there. But we do need to, like you mentioned, we need to find out if we have a quarterback or we don't. Let's answer that question, and it's going to happen. But if you've got that question answered after 8 weeks, but now you need to move on to, like, what about the rest of the roster? I'm fine with losing games to get a better quarterback next year. And if Tyrod ends up losing these games, but now we can at least evaluate the rest of the roster. And Daniel Jones couldn't even run this offense. And I don't think that's going to be the case. Again, this is like worst case.
Right.
That was just something that has crept into my mind because I'm going a roundabout way to get here. We were talking about betting. Like, Daniel Jones rushing yards are really interesting to me. I think Daniel Jones is going to be used as a runner more than he has in the past. And as a result, I would be shocked if he can't exceed his season-long rushing total. The only issue becomes, does he actually get to play the number of games that he would need to get there?
His health as well. If they're going to put him in harm's way, given his, especially last
year.
Never
played a full season. He's never played a full season.
Right. So those things, health always is a factor when you're talking about betting any player prop over. But if for some reason his performance is so bad that they decide to pull him, that would be another reason as to why. But like, I think that they are going to, Daboll understands the upside of a dual threat running quarterback. You know, you're not going to call a ton of designed runs and read options for Daniel Jones. You're probably going to have fewer designed runs than Josh Allen had. That being said, Daniel Jones is a pretty good athlete, better than what a lot of people think of him from an athleticism perspective, number one. And number two, do you know what the number one most efficient play is in the NFL? The number one most efficient offensive play in the NFL. It's when a quarterback drops back to pass and sees an open run lane in front of him and goes and takes that run. It's not a designed quarterback run. It's not a quarterback drop back and just pass the ball. It's not a specific route type. It's when he is going to pass the ball, but a run lane opens up. These runs are averaging close to 10 yards per carry. Obviously way more than handing the ball off to a running back, and clearly not anywhere close to what an average pass completion, you know, average pass attempt would be. So these are the types of plays that Daniel Jones could really take advantage of. And I know that there are quarterback coaches out there and that there are OCs out there who are like, we want you to stay in the pocket. We want you to make your reads. We don't want you to lower your eyes. We don't want you to turn into a running quarterback. You know, you got to feel the pressure. You got to still evaluate. You got to throw the ball down the field. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to this for me. Do you want your offense to stay out on the field or not? If you want your offense to get first downs, to stay out on the field, you need a quarterback who is willing to, when a run lane is available, take it as quickly as possible, get down, be safe, don't get hurt, etc. But get those free yards because they really are free. Don't, you know, if you see a guy streaking wide open 25 yards down the field, fine, take it. And speaking of which, 25 yards down the field, I mean, I tweeted this out earlier this offseason, but Daniel Jones ranks number one in EPA per attempt on passes thrown 25 plus yards down the field since 2020. Nobody would know that because they didn't ask him to throw the ball deep.
They didn't throw the ball down the field at all.
Right.
It was crazy.
So hopefully with a better offensive design, desire to throw the ball in optimal situations, and then a nice play action game, you can get some nice second down or first and 10 shots down the field to just try it out. Now, I will tell you, like, as you're listening to this and thinking, what's the downside of that, is there's a delicate balance between efficient football, which bypasses third downs, and trying to go for explosive plays. If you try to go for an explosive play and you don't hit it, almost 100% of the time, you're going to wind up in third down, which you are going to have to convert to stay on the field. But as I wrote about in the Giants chapter of my book, you go from, if you get zero plays of 15 yards, you will score points about 5% of your drives that start inside your own 30.
Wow.
If you get one game, just one of 15 yards on a drive, you will score points on that drive over 50% of the time. We are talking about a 10x multiplier on the rate that you will score points if you get just one play of 15 yards versus no plays. So yes, bypassing third downs needs to be a goal, but you have to sprinkle enough shots down the field to try to skip whole series and pick up 20, 30 yard gains. Now we're talking about scoring points. So I think this offense is going to do a much better job of making those two things a priority, because it was quite clear to me, based upon the last couple of years, you did not prioritize explosive plays. You did not prioritize bypassing third downs. And I can tell you the Giants are going to do that because of who's calling plays and who's coached them in the past.
Yep. And you know who's going to love that, Weiss? Justin. Justin was beating that drum all off season.
You want to give us a Giants prediction real quick? I
got one other quick question, and then you can tack on your Giants prediction to the end real quick. In terms of where the Giants are in their life cycle, quarterback, they didn't pick up his fifth year option, new coach, new GM. Are there any teams of the last 10 years that sort of remind you of where the Giants are right now that went on to figure it out and did things the right way and found long-term success?
Man, that's a good question. I haven't given much thought to that, so I don't really know.
It's a tough answer.
What I do know is that a team like the LA Chargers was spending money on a quarterback, and that quarterback was never able to deliver them what they needed. And when they got in there, and I know they haven't won anything yet, right? This team hasn't even made the playoffs with Justin Herbert. But once you have that rookie quarterback in there on that rookie deal, and he's producing above expectation, the sky becomes the limit, and the good GMs are able to go and plug the holes, just like the Chargers GM has been doing. I need this D tackle. I need this other D tackle. I need this left guard. I need this wide receiver. And they can fill in the voids of what a team is lacking very easily when a quarterback's on that rookie deal. So I know you've had Daniel Jones on the rookie deal, but he was not giving you above expectation performance out on the field. So I don't know in terms of the life cycle, but what I could say is this: it's probably more than likely, as a betting man, you guys haven't even started the life cycle yet.
I agree.
You are at like,
we're still dead.
you are at the age where like you're at a funeral parlor and they're just getting ready to like wheel out the old body, right? The old corpse. And because I still
think it's more of a crime scene, actually. Yeah. And Dave Gettleman is behind bars.
Yeah, we're waiting for the ambulance.
Maybe that's a better analogy, but you still aren't yet to the point of that new birth, in my opinion, because it will come when you have that quarterback on a rookie deal. And so I don't want the Giants to, like, as much as I want Daniel Jones to do great, and I'm saying I don't know what he's got in the tank. If he is great and if he is their guy, all of a sudden now you're paying a guy
That's the conundrum.
Second deal, and it's not that rookie. In a perfect world for me, I want, regardless of what happens this year, I want the team to get a great handle on the talent that's on this roster and who they want to keep and who they don't want to keep, and have a really good understanding of that. Then I want this team to go out and get that rookie quarterback who is going to exceed expectations. And I want their GM to finally start to build over year two and three, a roster that's going to be able to win games on a run, just like the Buffalo Bills were able to do. Josh Allen, year one, year two, that team was okay. And they made a, but they were not like the team that was going to go to the AFC championship game. They weren't the team that was going to set scoring records in those first couple of years. Just more than anything, give this front office and this head coach time. They've been dealt a really shit hand. Let them figure things out. In terms of my prediction for this year, there's a lot of question marks. At one point, I was higher on this team. I'm now middle of the road. They will play a much easier schedule this year than they did last year. I think that it would not surprise me anywhere 6 to 8 wins this season. I don't know that I'm expecting a winning year, but could they hit or exceed that win total if a lot of things go right and Daniel Jones plays well? Yes, they absolutely can, in my opinion, but I'm not betting on that to happen. And more than anything, I just am excited to see what competent offense looks like here.
Yes.
And that's so why I think that it's going to make such a big difference what we see now versus what we saw then, just based on the philosophy and the tactics and the strategies that they're utilizing now. I think is going to make a world of difference, which is why I'm not willing to say 4, 5, 6 wins. Like, I think this team is getting to the higher end of that and upwards of like 8 wins. I don't think there's going to be a catastrophe of a season, because I think the coaching staff is going to be doing things so differently than previously that it's going to prevent such a low floor.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Warren, thank you for coming on. We'll wrap up. You can follow us all on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYGDaily. Follow Warren at SharpFootball. Check out his website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. Warren, thanks so much for coming on, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Good luck to you this year.
Thank you.